Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Here's a thesis. The most important decisions an individual makes in life are made between the ages of 15 and 23. I didn't just come up with that. That's a provocative statement made by Tony Campolo of Eastern College, Eastern University now. I'll tell you the truth. I disagree with Tony Campolo about a large number of things, including the future of evangelicalism and any number of other issues. But he is also one of the most provocative thinkers I run across from time to time. He made this statement in an interview with Youth Ministry, Youth Worker Journal. And when I looked at it, I thought, you know, there's really something to that. I want us to focus on that age group today. Is it true that the most important decisions you make in life are made between the ages of 15 and 23? Let me read you a statement here. He says, the most important decisions, every major decision that molds people for the rest of their lives is typically made between the ages of 15 and 23. Decisions about who to marry, what education to seek, how seriously to take Christ, what kind of commitment you want to have with the church, all of these are basically fixed during this time. I think there's a lot of wisdom there, and I think that points to why we must be extremely attentive to this age group. And why we in the church had better take seriously the task of making sure that these persons understand Christianity in a serious and personal way, lest these decisions made between the ages of 15 and 23 turn out to be decisions that are not good for them, are not good for their Christian testimony, and are not good for their witness to Jesus Christ, are not good for their effectiveness as Christian leaders. I want you to think about that with me today. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. At my website today at albertmohler.com, I deal with a cover story in this week's issue of the Weekly Standard. Stanley Kurtz is up to it again. Brilliant analysis. The cover story is entitled Polygamy versus Democracy. It's one of those really important think pieces that you all need to read, because Stanley Kurtz of the Hudson Institute is one of those who really is able to pull together so many different issues having to do with our current cultural situation. And he puts it together in a way that, for instance, ties the question of polygamy to same-sex marriage, the war on terror, the riots in Paris, and the future of America. Now, here is his thesis. His thesis is you can have polygamy or you can have democracy, but you cannot have both. Now, what in the world does polygamy have to do with democracy, you ask? Well, this goes back to the 1800s. Indeed, it goes back to a decision of the U.S. Supreme Court that stated in the 1870s that, indeed, companionate, heterosexual, monogamous marriage is necessary for the establishment of democracy, for the good and for the sustaining of democracy. Why would you make an argument like that? Well, the argument is made very clearly because democracy requires a certain social stability. And democracy also requires a certain understanding of how persons relate to one another. Now, how does that deal with polygamy? Well, polygamy, by its very nature, in terms of world history, patriarchal polygamy implies something other than the kind of social basis that is necessary for democracy. In Polygamy versus Democracy, which is published again, it's the cover story in this week's issue of the Weekly Standard, Stanley Kurtz really ties all of this together in a way that I think is both brilliant and important and somewhat frightening. In the case of 1878, known as Reynolds versus the United States, the Supreme Court upheld laws against polygamy. In other words, even back in the 1870s, there were those who argued that polygamy ought to be legal. Now, just remember that one of the requirements made for Utah as a state, then a territory, to enter the Union and become one of the states was that it had to criminalize polygamy. Mormonism, up to that time, had not only allowed, but had celebrated polygamy. It was a major change for Mormonism, and it was a very, very difficult issue for the territory of Utah. Nonetheless, the United States was firm in this requirement, and when it was challenged, the Supreme Court, in the Reynolds decision in 1878, came back and said, look, heterosexual monogamous marriage is absolutely necessary for the furtherance of democracy, and for that reason, the state, that is the United States of America, took a very hard stand and said, we are going to require monogamous marriage as the expectation of the law of any territory that would become a state of the United States. Just keep that in mind these days when you think about the debate over same-sex marriage. I go back to the fundamental issue that if marriage can mean anything other than monogamous heterosexual unions, it will eventually mean everything other, and that's exactly what's going on here. Because Stanley Kurtz also does something else of great importance. He goes to the law journals and demonstrates that there are those making arguments for polygamy now whose agenda is not polygamy. The agenda is the legalization of virtually any kind of sexual or romantic relationship. Now, we're going to be talking about this more next week. I want to give you a heads up so you can go read the article while right now it's available online at the Weekly Standard. Also, the links to it will be available at my website over the weekend. My analysis is found right now at albertmohler.com, and the magazine is also currently available on newsstands. Well, what else is going on in America right now? Well, it's a place of confusion. One of the places that is most confused is San Francisco, a story in Christianity Today telling us that an event known as Battle Cry that drew 25,000 teenagers to San Francisco has created quite a bit of controversy. Now, as Christianity Today reports, San Francisco has long considered itself a beacon for tolerance, but when this spring there was this huge event for sexual abstinence and for sexual purity, the San Francisco supervisors passed a resolution warning against the negative effect such Christians would have on the community. That's right. The San Francisco city government took a stand against Christian young people gathering for a rally for sexual abstinence. Let me go back to the story from Christianity Today. This was not the first time San Francisco officials have spoken out against a Christian campaign, and it likely won't be the last, but it did call into question whether politicians are permitted to attack the values of a religious group. David Hudson of the First Amendment Center said, quote, "If you single out a religious group and publicly criticize them, it at least leads to the danger of an Establishment Clause violation that the government, through its policies, is denigrating religion." Now, I find this really interesting. Battle Cry was a youth rally, and what we have here, according to this report, also in the San Francisco Chronicle, is the fact that San Francisco city supervisors, the elected leaders, municipal leaders of San Francisco, felt it was their responsibility to actively criticize these Christian young people for holding this meeting. By the way, Battle Cry did not attract a lot of nationwide attention, but it should have. It is a really, really important movement as young people are gathering together, and I even like the theme, Battle Cry, to say we're going to sound the alarm for this generation that we have to live differently than the world would have us to live. And this is just one of those reminders to us that there are places in America where now a city government, I mean, of all things, what if you were to tell your grandmother this? What if, for that matter, what if you were to tell me this just 5 or 10 years ago, that a city government would come out explicitly condemning young people for meeting together to call for sexual purity and sexual abstinence? You might say only in San Francisco. By the way, also only in San Francisco, the Humanist magazine you're not likely to have read this week includes news that San Francisco is looking to turn dog waste into power. City officials hope to convert 6,500 tons of dog waste a year into methane that can be piped directly into gas stoves, heaters, turbines, and anything else now powered by natural gas. The pilot program will process the droppings through methane digesters, something I did not even know existed until just a few moments ago, a technology introduced 20 years ago in Europe where dog droppings have long been processed along with food and yard waste. So in San Francisco, they're trying to collect all the dog waste in order to make methane to fuel. But if you want to get together for a group of Christian teenagers and young people to call themselves to sexual purity, you're going to have the city supervisors after you. Back to the issue, by the way, just to, for a moment, of polygamy. The Edmonton Sun in Canada is reporting that this is also a major issue there. Winston Blackmore is an avowed polygamist from a breakaway Mormon sect, and he has 20-some wives, three of whom are Americans who now face deportation. The Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, he claims, protects his religious rights as a polygamist. Well, this is another one of those issues that it comes down to a near neighbor here. This is right across America's northern border. And the question is whether the state has any right or responsibility, indeed, to standardize any kind of romantic relationship, any kind of family structure, any kind of understanding of marriage. You know, I have to tell you, one of the things I most enjoy is looking at the skylines of major cities. I have to admit, I love skyscrapers. There is an interesting article out this week on the skyscraper boom indicating that after years of something of a shortfall, no pun intended, of building tall buildings, they're back. The tallest building right now is in Taipei, Taiwan, 101 stories, and there are more coming. Right now, there are plans in Chicago for a building known as the Corkscrew that is likely to top any others now existing. I like what Cesar Pelli said when he said that very tall buildings touch us intimately in deep chords of our psyche. It's a very old human urge to point toward heaven. Yeah, Mr. Pelli, I think that's right, and I think you find it right with the story of the Tower of Babel. We'll be back to talk about the major decisions of life. Are they made between 15 and 23? Think about it. Welcome back, folks. This is the Albert Mohler Program. Tonight, I have the privilege of delivering the commencement address for Portland Christian School, a local Christian academy where they're going to be celebrating the graduation of a whole class of seniors, the class of 2006. This time of year, that's what we find ourselves doing, right? We're going to a lot of graduations. I've had the opportunity to speak at some, and it's a fun thing. It's a big milestone. It certainly seems that way when you're there. I have to say, looking back at it, my high school graduation was not quite the event I thought it was in that context, but at that age, boy, that's just about as big as it gets. And this is clearly some kind of transition in a young person's life. And I have to tell you right now, I have to look at this as the father of a 17-year-old about to be a senior next year, and I'm realizing, boy, this is hitting just a little too close to home. But when I read Tony Campolo's statement that I just read to you at the beginning of the program, in which he argues that the big decisions in most people's lives are made between the ages of 15 and 23, this really caught my attention. And I think he's on to something here. You know, I said at the beginning that I disagree with Mr. Campolo, Dr. Campolo, on any number of issues. But he's also a provocative thinker, and on this one, I have to say, I think he's just dead on right. I think for most persons, and of course there are big decisions made later in life, but for most persons, the determinative decisions are often made just during this time period. And we really know that. That's why we have such attention to adolescence, such attention to young adulthood. The years between 15 and 23, roughly the years that would encompass high school and college, boy, big decisions are being made. By the way, we do not have a great label for this generation, but I think the best one is probably just to call them what the demographers call them now, that is the millennials. In an address given by Arizona State University Administrator B.J. Hart, he identifies some of the characteristics of the world the millennials have known, and I thought this was so interesting, I just got to share it with you. He says, in the millennials' world, Grace Kelly, Elvis, Karen Carpenter, Andy Warhol, and Liberace have always been dead. Elton John has only been heard on easy listening stations. Somebody named George Bush has been on every national ticket except one. The Kennedy tragedy was a plane crash, not an assassination. They have never heard cassettes or 8-tracks. Cut and paste has never involved scissors. Condoms have always been advertised on television. Bill Gates has always been worth at least $1 billion. Toyotas and Hondas have always been made in the United States. 3 Mile Island is ancient history, and nuclear accidents happen in other countries. Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden have always existed. Les Miserables has always been on stage. There have always been ATM machines. They have never dressed up for a plane flight, and Starbucks has always been just around the corner. Now, that's a fascinating list to me, that little cultural analysis done by an admissions counselor at a major university. He knows the generation he's dealing with. This is a fascinating time to be a young person, and I say that not only as one who's very much concerned about this as a college and seminary president and as a pastor and churchman, but also as a parent, 14 and 17-year-old at home. This is a crucial age. Tony Campolo, who has been involved in youth ministry and in observing youth culture for a long time, argues provocatively and, I think, accurately that the biggest decisions in most persons' lives are made between 15 and 23. All right, what are we going to do about that? Number one, do you think it's so? Looking back, adults, is that true for you? What you were going to do? How seriously you were going to take Christ? How much you were going to be involved in the local church? Who you're going to marry? What you think marriage is? Were those decisions made then? And looking back at it, What does that say about how we ought to be ministering to young people right now in the church and in the home? The phone number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. This is one of those fun issues we get to talk about on Fridays. When we take one of the big issues of the culture, the big issues of life, and we say, all right, now what do we do with this? Let's just take this provocative thesis. Is it true, first of all? I mean, is it true? Is Tony Campolo right when he says that the biggest decisions in life, in the lives of most individuals, Christians he's talking about here in particular, are made between the ages of 15 and 23? Is it true for you? Do you think it's true for your kids? Does that scare you to death? The phone number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. You know, these generational kinds of analyses I do think are really interesting. I mean, it is fascinating to me that for this generation, cut and paste isn't something you do with scissors and paper. It's something you do with the click of a mouse. I have often imagined what it would be like if one had amnesia, you know, and a kind of the Rip Van Winkle thing, and all of a sudden you find yourself transported from the 1970s to the present day. It would be hard to know how to fit in. I mean, I was born in 1959. Dwight David Eisenhower was president of the United States. For my own kids, that is so far in ancient history, Eisenhower might as well have had his best buddy Julius Caesar. It just doesn't compute. And I guess that's true for every generation of young people, but boy, I'm telling you right now, we're living with a generation of young people. Bill Gates, by the way, calls them Generation E. I think that's a very important designator as well. When Bill Gates calls them Generation E, he means they are the electronic generation who have never known a time without virtually unrestricted access to information and entertainment. This is the Generation I for iPod. They've got it attached almost like it's a major organ of their body. You know, they are as facile with a computer as my generation wanted to be adept with a car. As a matter of fact, I'm not sure they could even the boys in this generation, I'm not sure they could find, you know, a cylinder on the car's engine if they had to. That was the preoccupation of my generation. But I tell you what, they know how to do things digitally that the rest of us just have to sit back and watch in amazement. Let's go to Barry calling from Kingsport, Tennessee, listening on WHCB. Go ahead, Barry.
Hey, thank you for taking my call, Dr. Mueller.
Well, what do you think of this? I mean, what about the thesis that the biggest decisions in life are made between the ages of 15 and 23? Does that ring true to you?
I believe it does. I think I would definitely agree with that. And I think that we're seeing a lot of kickback today from the breakdown of the family, because in earlier generations, you would see that the kids are still under the tutelage of their parents and people in the family, whereas now you're seeing that they're basically led by outsiders.
Okay, Barry, boy, are you right, and that's one of the main reasons I wanted to have this discussion today, because what I'm hoping to do is to wake up some parents, first of all, to the fact that you better get really, really involved with your kids in this age group, because otherwise the decisions they make may be decisions that are not good, are not holy, are not healthy, and you will not like. And by the way, Barry, there is an interesting book out there entitled The Other Parent. And it's about adolescence in America, and it suggests that many American adolescents are being parented, insofar as they're parented at all, by their peers, their peer group and associations, rather than by their actual parents. And Barry, you're exactly right. One of the reasons for that is the breakup of the family. And, you know, I saw a statistic just the other day saying that half of all teenage boys in America today have spent at least a large part of their childhood and adolescence without a dad in the home. That ought to scare you to death. And then you have the fact that even where there are two parents supposedly residential in the home, there is an awful lot of disconnectedness right now. You know, I think there are a lot of adults, a lot of parents who really don't know their kids all that well. You know, folks, that requires you to have something radical. It's called conversations. You're actually going to have to talk to them. You're going to have to listen to them. And you're going to have to invade their personal space. How's that? You're going to have to pull the iPod iBuds out of the ear, and you're going to have to make them look you in the face and have a talk. If you're not ready for that yet, then put them in the front seat of the car beside you and go down the road and make them talk, because they can't jump out. And here's what you're going to find out. They're really pretty desperate to talk with you. The millennials, the current generation of teenagers and young adults, they're making big decisions. Tony Campolo says the biggest decisions of life between 15 and 23. Let's talk about it.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back. You know, I have disagreed with some of the statements made by Dr. Tony Campolo in different contexts on different issues in times past, and yet he is a very provocative thinker, and I tend to read what he writes. He's got a new book coming out entitled Letters to a Young Evangelical. I find that really interesting because that's a series. I think it was Alan Dershowitz that wrote Letters to a Young Lawyer, and I think Christopher Hitchens, Letters to a Young Journalist, and so it'll be interesting to see what he comes up with there. But he is very interested in young people. He has for years taught at Eastern College, now Eastern University, and they've named a school for him, the Campolo School of Social Change. I saw this this interview in Youth Worker Journal, and when I saw this statement he made, I said, you know, that's the topic we're going to talk about. It's the kind of statement that immediately catches my eye because it distills a huge universe of issues into one very tight little question, and that is it true that most Christians make the biggest decisions of their lives between the ages of 15 and 23. Basically, let's just say high school and college. But between that period, however you want to define adolescence, in that period, these big decisions are being made. What am I going to do with my life? What kind of person am I going to be? Who am I going to marry? What am I going to think about marriage? How serious a Christian am I going to be? How involved am I going to be in the local church, et cetera, et cetera? You know, those are huge questions. Do you agree? Disagree? Looking back at your own life? What do you think? And what does this say to us about how seriously we better take youth ministry and college ministry? The phone number 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Minburn, Iowa, where Anthony's on the line listening on KFFF Radio. Go ahead, Anthony.
Yes, Dr. Mohler. I think I agree with this gentleman. And I think two big decisions that kids face is whether they're going to be promiscuous in sex before marriage. And then also their career path, where they go, because a lot of times it seems once you get yourself set on a career path, whether it's going to school, not going to school, for whatever, that's the way you keep heading, and it's very hard to change direction.
Yeah, it sure is, isn't it? And by the way, when you say it's very hard to change direction, Anthony, when it comes to, let's just say, the understanding of one's sexuality, And as you say, making big decisions. Am I going to keep myself pure until marriage, or am I going to give myself to the sexual wisdom of the world? And then, you know, who am I going to marry? And what do I think marriage is? You know, those are just absolutely huge. And like you say, making a bad decision there really sets the landscape for some very, very difficult things later in life. And I think there are just an awful lot of people who would like to relive their adolescence, or at least their young adulthood, and some decisions they'd like to make otherwise. And it's just a little late. Anthony, I appreciate your call, and it's good to hear from you there in Iowa. I think when you think about these big decisions, it's frightening to think that they're being made by people that that we don't allow to do many, many other things. I mean, you can't vote till you're 18, but there are kids making big decisions about sex long before they're 18. And let me tell you, that'll scare you, because I think the decisions made about sex are more important than the decisions made about politics. I'll tell you that right away. And then what am I going to do with my life? By the way, I saw the other day that in the state of Florida, they're actually considering having kids in middle school declare what they think their vocation might be and put them in special tracks. You know, that's common in Europe right now. If you're going to go in Germany to the Gymnasium, that's the academic high school, you got to prepare for that early on. And if you don't graduate from a Gymnasium, you are not going to go to a major university. You know, I don't know. How many 12-year-olds know what they're going to do in life? The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Do we make the biggest decisions of our lives between the ages of 15 and 23? And what does that mean? Let's go to Kathy calling from Springfield, Missouri, listening on XM 170. Go ahead, Kathy.
Hi, Dr. Mohler. Thank you for taking my call. I heard Tony Campolo a few years ago at a youth workers conference, and I'm kind of like you. I don't agree with everything he says, but I do agree with him on this point. I've taught high school and middle school, Sunday school for years. I'm 50 years old, and my youngest child just graduated from high school last week. And I think it's true. It doesn't mean that you've ruined your life if you make a bad decision in these 10 years, but I think between 15 and 25, you make the most life-altering decisions of your life, usually not necessarily for the best for you, but
Yeah, and Kathy, I could just tell by the very way you present your comments here. First of all, telling me a little bit about your story and your involvement in youth ministry and in Sunday school and the local church, and then your own experience as a parent. Congratulations, by the way, on the graduation of your youngest from high school. I can tell that you really pour yourself into your kids and the kids of others during this time. You know, isn't it just a wake-up call to how important it is to have our kids surrounded by the right influences and the right influencers during this time? Parents, first of all, boy, we better show up and be ready. The local church, too. This responsibility is huge. The phone number, 877-893-8255. Coast to coast, this is the Albert Mohler Program. When I was 12 years old, I was pretty sure I wanted to be a pharmacologist. I don't know how I got into that, other than the fact that I was interested in academic stuff and medicine, and I thought I wanted to be a doctor, and this was when the drug scare was going on big time, narcotics and all this, and I just thought that was really, really cool. I did a report one time, I don't know, like 6th or 7th grade, on being a pharmacologist, and by the way, that was the end of my pharmacological career. Later on, I thought I was going to be an attorney. And it was when I was about 18 years old, I really perceived a call to ministry. It was when I was 15 or 16 years old that I think something was awakened within me in terms of a lot of theological questions that really led me in those directions. It was during those years I really was so involved in the local church and found such happiness there that I was certain I'd be involved with the church for the rest of my life. It was during those years that I had to figure out who I was in terms of marriage and all the rest. And it was between the ages of 15 and 23, the very ages we're talking about here, that I courted and married my dear wife, Mary. And I look back at that and think, you know, who would I be without those decisions? Well, I'd be someone else somewhere else. I mean, I'd be the same body, have the same name. But I think the whole contour of my life would be so radically different. Oh, and I left out, you know, where I would go to college and the educational choices. And by the time I was 23, I'd graduated not only from college, but from seminary. And, you know, that's a whole lot in a short compress of time. Tony Campolo made the statement we're debating today. We're discussing it anyway. Arguing that the most important decisions in life are made between the ages of 15 and 23. I just think he's dead on right about that. I know for some individuals, there'll be some decisions that will come earlier and later, and there are other decisions that you would have to put in that big category, such as I was 9 years old when I made a public profession of faith in Christ, and that has to be right up there. But in terms of thinking about who you are and who you're going to be for the rest of your life, I think that 15 to 23 age situation context there, high school and college put together, really is where the action is. Let's go very quickly to Kingsport, Tennessee, where Charlie's on the line, listening on WHCB. Go ahead, Charlie.
I agree with what's said on the decision that kids make in that age. It is a very important time in your life. And I also think a strong part is the fact that discipline isn't what it used to be. I was born in 59 also, and I think that plays a big part in kids making choices and decisions also.
Yeah, and Charlie, let's be real clear about that, and that's a very good point, that when we talk about discipline, we're not just talking about punishment. We're talking about parental oversight over all of life, you know, teaching. A disciple, that's at the heart of what discipline is the one who learns. And parents are not disciplining their adolescents, that's for sure, not just in terms of punishing them for misdeeds, but in terms of teaching them, making disciples out of them. Thanks for your call, Charlie. Let's go to David calling from Bartlett, Tennessee, listening on the World Wide Web. Go ahead, David.
Hello, Dr. Mohler. I agree that the decision-making between 15 and 23 is very important. I guess my comment would be more so as parents, and as, on top of that, as being Christian parents, we need to take an active part in our children's lives even earlier than that. The example that I gave was that I have a preschooler who is 3 years old, and he is learning to say prayers at that school. Well, that school has gated to use God or Jesus within that prayer. So I think as parents, take an active part even from the get-go, lest it be 15 to 23. I think even from three on, we need to be a part of our child's life, because it seems like the teachers and the peers are the family or the parents. they see them more than the parents do.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, if you distill the hours in a child's life, it is fairly daunting for parents to add up how many hours others really have that child's attention. And with teenagers, let's consider this. I saw a survey just last week indicating that the average teenager has less than an hour of conversation with either or both parents at any point in the course of a week. Meanwhile, that child is spending hours in front of a television, hours connected to an iPod, hours playing video games, and more than that, hours sitting with someone else talking to him or her, teachers, and others in their peer group. So that's fairly frightening. And I also want to agree, David, of course we have to start earlier than this, and that's why we need a continuum of parental responsibility, frankly, from before the child is born until when the child is truly on his own. And generally that means married and establishing his own household. And yet I think the wake-up call today is the fact that we had better make certain that when these big decisions are being made, we're more involved, not less. And here's one of the frightening things. For a lot of parents, I mean, after all, when you've got a preschooler, you're doing all kinds of things. And I talked to a dad the other day who said, look, I have all kinds of happy days in my life, but one of the happiest was when I no longer had to answer my son's call for help in the bathroom. You know, okay, that's a great day, you know. And there are stages in life in which you spend all your time with the kids because they can't feed themselves, they can't take care of themselves, and all the rest. And then they become teenagers, and we say, hey, we don't need to feed them, and they can take care of their own needs now. And what they can't take of, care of on their own, well, their peer group will take care of. That is so dangerous. That's when parents need to jump in, when Christian leaders in the local church need to jump in and be especially involved. Who is most influential in your child's life? Just think about that. All right, let's go to Donna calling from Tampa, Florida. Let's go to XM. Go right ahead, Donna.
Hello. I agree with Tony Campolo's statement. And have been, in fact, telling my son, who's now 21 since he was about 14, that the decisions he makes between the ages of 16 and 26 are not only the most important decisions he'll make in his life, but many of them will affect the following 10 years of his life. And so he needs to be very careful about the decisions he makes, because even some small decisions in a non-Christian worldview, for example, having sex out of marriage, can turn out to be very big decisions. And the other thing is that what I figured out once my son turned 18, my job wasn't done. I need to now teach him how to be an adult. And until he is making good decisions on his own, I'm going to be involved in teaching him what it means to be an adult.
You know, I hear a certain firmness in your voice, Donna, and I just want to tell you that I appreciate that. I admire it because I do not hear that sound of strength and authority and intentionality in a lot of parents of kids these ages. And I say kids, no insult there, but that is to a 22 or 23-year-old, you're a young adult, that's true. So act like it. And this is where we need a wake-up call, and that's why I thought Tony Campolo's statement was so provocative, it would be good fodder for our conversation, and it has been. You know, you need to continue this conversation with your spouse, with other parents of teenagers, and in the local church. What are you not doing as parents or as a local church that clearly needs to be done in order to help these young people make the right decisions, the big decisions, between 15 and 23? I'll be right back with some final thoughts. Welcome back. I'm going to try to answer some of my own questions here in the next couple of minutes. I said, what is it that parents need to do? What is it that local churches need to do? Let me offer just a couple of suggestions. Number one, parents. And I'm not just talking to you. I am the parent, and my wife and I are the parents of the two teenagers, 14 and 17-year-old. And, you know, again, when I'm speaking tonight at Portland Christian School for their graduation, I'm just thinking, boy, this is really hitting close to home, because one more year, you know, we've got a high school senior, rising senior in our home. And it just seems to me this is one of those times when we need to realize that we have got to get into our own kids' lives and be really, really clear that that there's nothing off limits and that everything's on the table and that we want to help them to define reality in a way that will lead to their health, their happiness, and even more importantly, their holiness, which cannot be separated from the other two. And this means that we have to give them time and attention, and that we have to risk some of those awkward conversations about just going into territory where a lot of parents won't go. You know, how do you decide how to spend money? How do you decide who you're looking for and what you're looking for in a mate? You know, these are things a lot of parents just think their kids are going to get by osmosis. And you're exactly right. The problem is the osmosis isn't coming from you. It's coming from their peers and the popular culture that will give them all kinds of things that you're not there to counter if you're not intentional about it. What about the local church? All right, so I'm going to be critical of youth ministry as a generalization here for a moment. You know, I have said this again and again, and people get mad when I say it, so just get ready to get mad. I think in most local evangelical churches, the main double message that kids get in their teenage years is love Jesus and don't have sex till you're married. It's kind of a two-point theology. And that's not enough. We insult adolescents, teenagers and young adults, when we act like they have to be entertained and given pablum, pre-digested doctrine, like baby food, rather than the strong meat of God's word. It is an insult to the scripture. It is an insult to God's glory. It is an insult to the teenagers themselves. In your local church, start giving them solid stuff and watch them thrive on it. They won't ask for it. They don't know what to ask for. But they will thrive on it when they get it. And you can say, well, what good is it going to be? Well, number one, just remember the scriptural promise. We're to hide the word in our heart, knowing that there will be fruit from the investment of that word, from the sowing of those seeds that will come out later in life. Are the big decisions of life made between 15 and 23? Well, a lot of them are. But no matter how old you are, let's make those decisions on the basis of God's word. I'll be back next week to join you for Intelligent Christian Conversation. This is the Albert Mohler Program.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.